Hello, welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sutter, and joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure for our Locked On Suns Twitter page, you're already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. And Brendan, this might be one of the crazier days that I remember in NBA history as far as covering it as a reporter, because we had not only the Kristaps Porzingis trade happen, which came out of nowhere. He went to the Dallas Mavericks in a pure salary dump, which kind of indicates to me that maybe Kevin Durant might be on his way to New York here in about 6 months. But outside of that, we also got the Lonzo Ball news snuck in here by Tanya Ganguly of the Los Angeles Times, which we're going to hit on today. And if you guys listened to yesterday's episode, you guys know this is part two of our stock reports as well. So don't worry, we're going to hit on also Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton. But we're going to spend the first 10 or 15 or so minutes talking about Lonzo Ball and this breaking news from today, because I think it's pretty important. It relates right to the Phoenix Suns. And this is straight from Tanya Ganguly's Twitter account from the Los Angeles Times. She's the beat writer over there. She said, after learning the Lakers' offers to the Pelicans, Lonzo Ball's camp maintains that New Orleans isn't the desired destination. Phoenix makes the most basketball sense if Ball were to be traded, and according to two sources, that there is mutual interest. And I also got this confirmed through a league source myself that said the Suns really coveted Ball during the 2017 pre-draft process. He was ranked number one on their board. So if he really is available and for the right price, Brent, I think this is actually a pretty legit rumor, and it's something that we should really be monitoring next week or so before the deadline.
Yeah, it's kind of, I'm excited about Ball. I think he's a great fit. But I think I'm kind of annoyed to a certain degree to have to keep up with all this AD stuff. It was nice to just sit on the side as a spectator a little bit and watch it all unfold. But I think the Suns are smart to get involved any way they can, right? I mean, I think Brian Windhorst put it best on his own podcast earlier this week when what feels like 16 different rumors ago, it was just AD initially asking for a trade, which was Monday morning. Windhorst said, 28 other teams right now are on the phone figuring out how they can get involved. Obviously, Boston cannot at this moment, but he was basically like, anyone who doesn't feel like they could get something out of this is not doing their job. And so I think Ball was the pretty obvious candidate, aside from maybe Drew Holiday, for the Suns to capitalize on and try to take. And so pretty quickly here, we've already seen that not only is Ball not in any hurry to go to New Orleans, which of course makes sense, the same reason AD probably doesn't want to play in New Orleans, but that he's interested in Phoenix is obviously really big news. And if the Suns could do something, send an asset maybe to New Orleans, send an asset to LA, although I'm not exactly sure what the Lakers really would want, they definitely should. And I guess right now where we are with the Lakers Pelicans talks is, according to Brad Turner, another Lakers reporter, they gave him five offers this morning, one of them being Ball, Kuzma, Ingram, Zubats, and the first round pick this year. I think that's probably the best one. That's kind of the everything offer. And the Pelicans are sitting on those and figuring out how to go forward. So I think we'll start to get even more here soon. But I think Ball makes a lot of sense here. What do you think?
I'm totally right there with you. And I think if you look at just his ability to impact the game in Phoenix from a fit standpoint, Brendan, we've been talking about the point guard position now for over a year now on this podcast ever since the Eric Bledsoe trade. It's been a major need. And if you look at what he would fit here, he has elite field instincts. He has great positional size, 6'6" as a point guard, or same size as Devin Booker. So that'd be a really easy backcourt mismatch for a lot of teams. He has tremendous vision and passing creativity. So I think that's exactly what this team needs. And adding that he's a possible All-NBA defender in a couple of years, with what we've seen so far flashes-wise, I think it is exactly what you want. You're just a low-usage guy who's going to feed DeAndre Ayton, who's going to let Devin Booker be off the ball and be more like a Klay Thompson, James Harden type of guy. I think it makes a lot of sense for the right price, Brendan. Before we get into like some possible like deals that make sense involving New Orleans or without New Orleans, what do you think about just the possibilities of Ball and how you could help guys like Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton? Because I think it really helps them out like a big time.
Yeah, I think he's a pretty solid fit, especially next to Booker. I think the size to defend multiple positions, you can always pretty much assume that he'll be able to defend the best opposing ball handler, the best opposing playmaker at the guard spot, which is definitely in a big way checks a box that you want next to Booker. He's just 21, so he fits along this team's timeline much better than a lot of the other options we've talked about. And then I think, you know, like we actually conveniently talked about this a little yesterday with the pace. Just, I think they do want to play faster than they are. Earlier in the year, the Suns were playing much faster. I think they've had to kind of grind things down with the injuries and just kind of the personnel that's available to them. But ideally, I think Koshkov wants to have this team get out and transition a lot more than they are. And Ball, if nothing else, I think that's humongous value that he brings, is outlet passes, vision. He's constantly trying to get easy buckets in transition. And he has the ability to rebound really well for his size and go and create those all by himself. So it's maybe not similar to the kind of guys we've talked about in the past from an offensive standpoint, but I think he's just such a unique player and such a raw player still, you know, not the obviously we should probably hit really quickly. I know a lot of people probably know Alonzo's one of the most famous players in the league somehow, despite only being in his second season and not really proving much. But the big knock on him right now is his free throw shooting. 42%. He rarely takes them. He's kind of a similar to Rajon Rondo in that way, that he just kind of shies away from contact. Although he is finishing this year, last year 49% within 3 feet of the basket, this year 60. Not a ton of attempts there, but he is improving slightly, and I think he's going to get a lot better.
I'm right there with you, and from what I've heard, Brendan, I've heard that the Suns are interested in being a facilitator with the Lakers and the Pelicans about a three-team deal. And how comfortable would you be about taking on a Solomon Hill contract? Because it seems like it would be the cost of taking a guy on like Alonzo Ball, especially with Solomon Hill kind of has like the Ryan Harrison contract, but it's about $8 million less than that, about $12 million per year for 2020. So would you bite the bullet for that? Say you take on or trade a TJ Warren and or a Josh Jackson for Alonzo Ball and a Solomon Hill?
I mean, I don't think I would, first of all. But second of all, I mean, I think there's just so many moving parts here that I don't know if, I mean, I obviously understand from the Pelicans' perspective, you start to run out of individual player assets that they can take back. And you start to think about other ways that they can get value in a deal like that to get out of Davis or get off of Davis. So I understand that they might want to move his contract's kind of the last bad contract on their books at this point after getting off of Omer Asik and Alexei Ajinsa the past couple summers. But I don't necessarily know if that's going to be the price. I think if the Suns are willing to give up good players and or, you know, the Bucks pick, things like that, I think they can get it done without having to be the team to take on that salary. I mean, obviously New Orleans would love to walk away from this with a restocked cupboard of assets and no bad salary on their books, and maybe they get there, but I don't know if that's a given. So I think I would try, if I'm the Suns, to just kind of control the bidding process. We'll give you what we have to offer, but you know, I don't know if I'm in such a hurry to get Ball that I want to also affect my ability to upgrade elsewhere.
I've seen this question brought up on Suns Twitter over the past few hours, and I found it kind of interesting because this upcoming draft is so weak, Brendan. But would you give up in this deal from the Pelicans' point of view? Let's say you're Dell Demps. Would you covet more the Suns' 2019 first-round pick or Lonzo Ball? Because I've seen an argument, a pretty compelling one, to be honest, where you could trade a 2019 Suns pick, top three protected, with like one of the young wings, maybe not even one of the young wings, maybe just the expiring salary of Troy Daniels, for Alonzo Ball.
That's what I was going to say. If it's the pick, I think it's not, you know, maybe a couple players, Jackson and Warren obviously come to mind, or a pick, but I don't know if Lonzo's so valuable that you give up. I think a pick, this year's pick, if it isn't Zion and Lonzo, probably have decently similar value. Obviously the pick probably even a little bit higher, to be honest, just because you'll have two more years of cost control on that guy, and Lonzo's a little bit of damaged goods just because he hasn't improved dramatically like you might have hoped. So I would be hesitant to give that first. I think you're starting to talk about an even bigger deal at that point with slightly more value coming elsewhere. It's going to be pretty tangled. I mean, that's the reality here. If you're talking about any more than a two-team trade, it's already going to get complicated. If you couple that with the fact that this one's going to be just a mega trade, no matter who it ends up being with from a Pelican standpoint, there's going to be tons of players going in either direction, tons of picks probably as well. So if the Suns get involved, I think we need to prepare for this roster looking a lot different and a whole bunch of rumors flying around here in the next couple of days.
Yeah, it's been crazy the past 24 hours of this news cycle. It was about 24 hours ago where the Dell Demps wasn't even listening to offers from the Lakers. Now we have five different offers from the Lakers on the table. So,
and Kristaps Porzingis is on a different team.
That's just
insane.
Yeah. What do you think about just the overall impact of today? And you think more about this, especially from the Suns' point of view. What do you think is the possibilities now? Have they risen for you? I think I asked you this on a podcast a day or two ago. Your percentage chance of Anthony Davis being traded for a trade deadline, because after this flurry of news today and hearing all about Anthony Davis and all this Lonzo Ball stuff, it seems like this percentage might be rising to the point where maybe New Orleans does cave to LA.
It feels like it's going that way. I mean, people should go read the Woj and Zach Lowe dual byline story this morning that just showed kind of where everyone stands. The idea of Kyrie Irving not committing fully is definitely interesting. That changes everything to a certain degree. I would say it's probably, I felt pretty confident that it was headed that way anyway, but I think maybe a few percentage points higher. Maybe what did I say before? 30, 35?
Yeah, around.
I would say probably like, 45, maybe not quite 50-50 yet, but getting there. It just feels like, I heard someone say like LeBron and Rich Paul are showing that they really kind of run the league. And I think it's hard to ignore that, hard to disagree with that. So one thing I do want to close with here as we kind of recap the craziness from today that you brought up earlier in the day was just the Dallas thing. It might not seem like it impacts the Suns because of course they weren't involved, but getting Porzingis, if he's healthy, in there with Luka Doncic, who Suns fans were already dreading having to hear about for who knows how many years in the future as he kind of builds the next championship team up around him in Dallas. Well, they did that in a hurry today, and that's another young competitive team that the Suns have to watch out for in what was already a pretty terrifying Western Conference.
Yeah, that's the scary part about it. That kind of flew under the radar from a Suns perspective with all the Lonzo news happening today, is that the Dallas Mavericks are now a sustainable contender in the Western Conference, now with like 10 or 11 teams now that are just like that. So the Suns are kind of on the clock here to accelerate their rebuild and finally be on the pedestal where those other teams are. But let's close the Lonzo situation out here, Brian, with one more question for you. And I just wanted to gauge your opinion about if you were in the Suns' shoes right now. Obviously, there seems to be mutual interest here on both sides about Lonzo Ball. What would you offer in this situation if you're trying to help facilitate? Would you offer the Suns pick, or would you go more towards like one of the wings and the Bucks pick? Or what do you think it takes anyways?
I would probably, if you could get it done for Josh Jackson and TJ Warren, I really think I would try to do that. I don't think that's a super unreasonable offer. I mean, I think the Lakers are overvaluing Ball from the perspective of trying to make him seem like he's an appealing core part of a package for Davis, but I think if they're being realistic with themselves and they were able to get, especially if TJ ended up in Los Angeles, I don't know if they probably don't want to do that because they don't want to clog their books for next season at all. But I mean, Lonzo is basically making the same amount as TJ, just a few million dollars less. So either way, I would start there. And then I actually don't think I would give up the Suns pick this year in this deal. I just don't think it's worth it. Lonzo will be heading into his third season already. That's two less years of control you have. So I would do the Bucks pick. I would do Jackson. I would do Warren. And then obviously anything else outside of Bridges, Booker, Ayton would be up for grabs as well.
All right. That's actually really similar to what I was going to do. And it's TJ Warren and Josh Jackson, which might be surprising to some people. I'm firmly on the Josh Jackson bandwagon still, but I think that he might be in need of a scenery change. And if it's for Lonzo Ball, I think it makes a lot more sense with the roster construction here. So TJ Warren and Josh Jackson, no picks involved though for Lonzo Ball. And you take on the Solomon Hill contract, you bite that bullet for a year. And as we saw in the Dallas trade though, Brandon, those expiring contracts in a year or two, they could really matter as far as salary dumps go.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's going to be huge at this trade deadline. There'll be a lot of trades that people don't understand why, like why does the team want that guy? Well, no, they just want one less year of salary so they can spend a little quicker.
Yep, exactly. That'll do it for this first segment, guys. Before we go on to our usual grades here, as you guys know from yesterday's episode, I want to tell you guys really quickly about the Locked On NBA Twitter account. Brent and I both follow along over there. If you're not already doing so, please go follow at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. It is one of the more valuable resources as far as NBA Twitter goes, in my opinion, because We have not only Brent and I's Twitter account synced on there, but we have every single NBA Locked On podcast host on one page in one area. So if you're not already doing so, go on Twitter.com, go on your Twitter app, type in at Locked On NBA Net, and go hit that follow button.
And as you look into 2019 and any changes you might be wanting to make, I want to tell you about a way to make that all even easier. If you're looking to buy or sell a home this year, the best way to save money doing that is with Homie. Homie is a fantastic new sponsor that I really love because I love to save you guys money. That's obviously the key with just about anything we tell you guys about, but at Homie, it's even bigger. They can sell any priced home over there for just $1,299 when you close, and before that, just $199 when you list your house. They also have an app and a mobile interface that are super easy to use, a team of real estate agents and lawyers to help you along the way. And like I said, the biggest priority here is to save you money. You also qualify if you use Homie for a $5,000 buyer refund. And if you use Locked On Suns to get there, you'll get an extra $100 off that listing fee, making it just $99 to list your house at Homie. It's going to be a phone number this time, not a coupon code, not a promo code. I'm sure you guys know by now. But please give this number a ring. It is 602-892-3335. Let them know you came from us. Get $100 off that listing fee by calling 602-892-3335. All righty, let's move on here. It's a little bit of a big episode today, but let's move on to Mikal Bridges, who I think is we've been hitting it hard the past two games. He's really been on a tear. I mean, not huge scoring numbers, but just showing his overall impact on the game in a really big way. What have you seen over the past 25, 30 games from Bridges?
It's been up and down, in my opinion. I think the first few weeks of this stretch, by the way, he's played all 25 games for the Suns. They're 7-18 over the stretch, you guys know. He's averaged 8 points, almost 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.5 steals, and almost 1 block per game. But it's been kind of up and down shooting-wise, and it's kind of surprised me a little bit. But over the past week or so, he's really gotten a lot more aggressive offensively. And as we touched on, I think, on the last episode, before we started doing our trimester grades, it has to be done for this to rebuild to really work, because they spent a really pretty penny on Mikal Bridges, and for him to really find some untapped offense potential, which we're kind of seeing now in the Trevor Ariza role that he left in December, he's really filling that role and really running away with it.
He's been great. I mean, I agree that it's been inconsistent for him. He's obviously, because we know he's not necessarily an aggressive player right now. He's not a guy who is going to have the ball in his hands and make a play, at least at this point in his rookie season. But so I think, the injuries and different changes elsewhere in the lineup are going to affect him a little more than they might for somebody else. But recently, I completely agree, he's been on a tear. And I'm looking up his steal percent is 2.3%. That's, just over 2% of the total plays he's on the court, he's getting a steal, which seems small, but those anything over really like 1.5 is elite. He's in the 92nd percentile for wings there. Just about a 1% block rate. So similar to D'Anthony Melton, it's showing up in the stats, their impact on those defensive hustle plays, that kind of playmaking defensive player creating easy opportunities on the other end. And right now that's his value, and I think he's filling his role pretty perfectly.
I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing for Mikal. I think it's a good thing for Mikal, but a bad thing for the Suns overall. But his IQ, his basketball IQ really stands out in this team in a positive way for him. He's averaging a really good true shooting percentage at near 60% over this 25-game stretch and really throughout the year as well. He has a very good assist-turnover ratio as well of plus 3.5 over the stretch. What does it say about him? Like, just in a small usage role of 10%, his instincts and his impact still show up so much.
Yeah, it says a lot about him. I think it says a lot about how he's it's kind of like a statistical way to show that he's a glue guy. I mean, that's a thing we throw around, I think, when we don't know what else to say about somebody, I kind of feel like sometimes it's for guys who were like, why don't they impact the game more? And we're like, oh, it's a glue guy, he's really important. But I think Bridges actually really shows what that can mean, making the plays when the team needs them. But also, I mean, it does show up, the steals and blocks are nice, but I think you even look at, corner three, 23% of his shots come from there, and he's making only 33% of them. Wow. It was okay. Not as high as I thought, but overall the 3-point shooting is there. He's getting those shots. He's getting more confident with them. being a little more aggressive in that Trevor Ariza role, as we talked about. So I think his impact is starting to show up a lot more. And I think the fact that it's happening as a rookie shows, you know, he really can continue to get a lot better. And I think that impact will hopefully this season, but if not, definitely next season, I expect a lot from him, but he's definitely showing progress this year.
Let's look to the defensive side of things here, because he's really flashed throughout the season and really over the past month or so, possible all NBA defense in the next few years with him. And I dug up this stat that I found really interesting on Basketball Reference, Brandon, and it's for wings that played a minimum of 1,000 minutes this year, who have at least a 55 true shooting percentage, plus 2.5 steal percentage, and plus 1.5 block percentage. Those, there's only three guys in the entire league, and it's Robert Covington, Jimmy Butler, and Mikal Bridges. So it kind of shows you that if he stays on this current path, we have ourselves, the Suns have themselves really a elite defender in a really short order.
Yeah, I want to see, I want to continue to see if he can get better as a, you know, on-ball stopper. You mentioned a lot of those guys, those names bring to mind guys who are just going to lock somebody down. Really valuable in the playoff series, really valuable if you want to switch to be able to just contain that ball handler. We've definitely seen him do that, but as he gets bigger, as he gets, you know, a little more comfortable with his athleticism at the NBA level, we saw him do some pretty athletic things at college, in college, but he hasn't necessarily flashed any dunks or big plays like that yet. I think we'll continue to see those, but looking really quickly too at his defense, his defensive impact, that the Suns defense is 4.4 points better per 100 possessions when he's on the court. That's in the 83rd percentile for all NBA players. He's one of the minutes leaders on this team after only playing 11 seconds on opening night. So it's been a pretty quick rise for him. And obviously he's an older rookie, but I think you have to be pretty pleased. I mean, you can pick holes because he's not a playmaker yet, but as far as being a role player, I think he's done just about everything you could have asked of him.
That's for sure. He's going to be an elite, like you said, a glue guy, elite role player in this league. I think he has all the makings of the next Robert Covington type of player. But what other points do you want to hit with Mikal Bridges? It seems like the other thing I've noticed him, or at least over the past week or so, is that he's not only gotten more comfortable, but he's gotten more assertive. And as you see over his past two games, especially, Brennan, he has 16 points and 17 points, and he's shooting over 60% from three. So how big is it for a guy like Mikal Bridges who takes almost 60% of his threes to really be a guy who is a sniper from the outside?
It's going to be really important. That's going to be a huge part of his game. I think that's why we harp on the weird release so often, is like, if he can figure that out, make him more consistently. I think the shooting is one area where that inconsistency you talked about has really shown up for him. I mean, 0-6 January 2nd against Philadelphia, right 2 days, two games after a 5-8 performance against Denver at home, so, or on the road. So I think the shot needs to be more consistent, and it will be. But I'm expecting, Eddie Johnson on the broadcast keeps talking about how he's expecting Bridges to have some 30-40 point game before the year's out, and I think I completely agree there. But I think that's pretty much all. I think, you know, we'll start to get an even bigger, better idea of what Bridges' ultimate impact is as he gets the ball a little bit more, hopefully down the stretch of this season and into next. But before we go on to our last guy here we got to do our grades. Yeah. What do you have for Bridges here?
For Bridges, I actually have a B+. I think just really, it would be an A if it wasn't just inconsistencies that I've seen. I know he's kind of probably hitting the rookie wall, like the other rookies kind of have at points here and there. But I think a B+ is pretty solid. It's running at the top of my grade so far, so I'll roll with that.
Yeah, actually, I'll go an A-. I think altogether, for him to be able to even have any sort of impact on this team with how bad it's been a lot of nights, and to still be starting and playing heavy minutes and have that impact show up statistically, that means while he's in the game, the defense is just really good, because the defense overall has been so bad that he, for him to still have that impact show up is super big. So A- for me. I agree on the rookie wall. He had multiple single digit games this stretch, but altogether, I think his value really needs to come on defense, and it has. So A-. I will now transition us here to DeAndre Ayton to finish things off. But before we do that, I want to tell you guys about the best new way to access our show. We appreciate all the love you give us at Bright Side of the Sun or Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, however you're finding this show. We, of course, appreciate it. But if you have a smart speaker, that's one more way to check out all the great stuff we give you guys. So if you have one of those, whether it's Google Home or an Amazon Echo, go ahead and tell it, play podcast, Locked On Phoenix Suns, the name of this show. Just simple. It'll queue up the next episode, start playing it, and away we go. So if you like what you're hearing here and you want to listen to it a little more comfortably, tell your smart speaker, play podcast, Locked On Phoenix Suns. Alrighty, let's finish up here with DeAndre Ayton, who obviously recently has missed some time. He's nearing 2 weeks here. But before that, this stretch saw him put up some huge games, the best games of his career. So what have you seen from Ayton over these past 25, 30 games?
It's been a really interesting journey we've been on the past few months with DeAndre Ayton. It started off really rocky, but in December, he really showed really the beginning of the stretch that we are talking about here in the second trimester report cards that he showed his dominance. He averaged like 25 and 15 for like three or four game stretch. And that was really a tease of what's to come with him. But ever since then, he put up his worst splits in January, which is surprising to me, his worst points, his worst rebound average, his worst block rate as well. So I think he's kind of had probably hit the rookie wall like Bridges there at the very end of the stretch. And with his sprained ankle, it kind of probably helped him to recharge the batteries. And it seems like from all indications are that DeAndre Ayton's going to be playing on Saturday against the Hawks. So what do you think about the beginning of the stretch with Ayton and the beginning and the end of the stretch? Because like we talked about yesterday with Devin Booker as well, there was kind of two different grades within this really trimester.
Yeah, he's inconsistency, right? I mean, that's what I said on yesterday's episode. It's what I said against the Spurs. Like, this team has had really high highs, really low lows. I mean, they beat Boston on the road. They beat Milwaukee on the road. They beat Denver. They've beaten some of the best teams in the entire league, and they've gotten crushed by some of the worst. So it's just really don't know what to expect. And I think individual players are responsible for that as well. So one thing I'm keying in on, you mentioned his box score stats going down a little bit month by month, especially the assist numbers. That's where I've been keying in. So seven games in October, he was averaging 3.3 assists. Obviously, that opening night win against Dallas, he just went off as far as playmaking. But per game, he went from 3.3 in October down to 2.1, then 1.8, and now in January down to 1.3. So that's a really big part of his value, I think, especially as you start to give him some more touches in the post. His ability to pass, to find cutters, to find the open man, rotate the ball, pass out of double teams, all that stuff he's going to need to do. And I think you felt pretty good about him doing that. I still do, but that's going to be something I'm already noticing and going to continue to watch, because that was a big reason why I was excited about him early in the season. And while he's improved in other areas, especially his defense, that playmaking has kind of gone away a little bit as he's made his way through the season.
Do you feel like, though, the empowerment by the coaching staff and everyone else starting to be more aggressive might play a role in that? Because it seems like, instead, he usually in earlier in the parts of the season, like you mentioned, October, November, when he got the ball in the low post, he'd be surveying around looking for shooters in the corners and the top of the break. But nowadays, with more people asking him to be more aggressive, it seems like he's answering those calls and kind of really shooting the ball, even though he doesn't really have an open shot at the time.
That's a good point. I mean, I agree with you to a certain degree. Maybe it's having my cake and eating it too a little bit to want him to do both. Maybe he's just not there yet. Maybe it's kind of a reading the game and starting to kind of learn what the right play is in a given situation, where he'll start to pile up numbers in a few different categories rather than focusing on one thing, which kind of does seem like what it is. You think about that second quarter he had against the Nuggets in a home game where he scored 24 points in the quarter. That was such an obvious focus on, I'm going to get underneath the defense here, get behind the defense, behind Nikola Jokic, who was obviously pretty slow footed, and I'm going to just finish everything. And he did it. And then the next few possessions, the adjustment didn't come. So I think that's definitely a good point. One other number I want to hit too, that has continued, 73% at the rim for him. That's in the 86th percentile. That's something that's been above 70 all year. And if he can keep doing that and fill out the rest of his game, the offense is going to be something to behold.
Yeah, that's a huge weapon going forward. And he's right near the top, right near guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo, which says a lot about the ability DeAndre Ayton has in that position. But let me run through his box score stats really quickly. He averaged 17.3 points, 11.1 rebounds,
as Brendan mentioned, 1.3 assists. He also had 1.2 steals, 1.1 blocks, 11 double-doubles in 19 games and 31 minutes per game. This is what we talk about DeAndre Ayton, though, Brendan. It seems like, which is really telling of a guy like him, how talented he is. Even with these inconsistencies, he still averaged 17, 11 in a block a game.
Yeah, exactly. It is pretty crazy. I mean, he's one of those guys, you look at the numbers and you're like, okay, well, it's kind of the opposite of Josh Jackson. We talked yesterday with Jackson, how it's like, you feel pretty good. You're like, oh, he's really making progress. These, this, this, and this are getting better. He's really improving. And then you look at the numbers and you're like, okay, well, not so much, not at all. So Ayton seems like the opposite, where you feel really like you're getting almost too hard on him. And you look at the numbers and you're pleasantly surprised. So he's obviously a really confounding player. We'll get to see a lot more of him. Glad he's coming back before the All-Star break too, so we can see this team at relatively full strength, at least with Booker and Ayton both on the court before the All-Star break. And I think that John Collins will be a fun little matchup for him on Saturday. But what is your grade here as we kind of wrap up? I don't remember. I think I was pretty high on him after the 1/3 point in the season, but where do you have him now, 2/3 of the way through?
I think for me, I'm going to end up actually the exact same grade as Mikal Bridges. I'm going to go a B plus here. I'm going to give him credit, some credit here. Just I think the rookie wall kind of hit him a little bit near the end in the sprained ankle. I like him being more aggressive, so I'll give him a break with the playmaking there. And him being actually more aggressive in the offensive glass, he averaged 4 offensive rebounds a game, which is a lot better than previous months. So being more aggressive, him trying to take on more of an alpha primary scoring mentality, I like that. So I'll give him a B plus. What do you say?
I'm right on the same page. I mean, I'm looking at individual performances in this stretch, just monster nights for him. He had 26 and 17 in Washington with 9 offensive rebounds. Then the very next night, of course, Suns fans remember that one. That was the triple overtime game. And then the early matinee game in Brooklyn the next night, he put up 26 and 18 with 3 blocks in that one. And then a few nights later, that Denver game I talked about, 33 points, 14 rebounds, 4 steals, 10 offensive rebounds. So I just feel like seeing those are the kinds of things where you feel like a rookie has just special promise. You have to see those kinds of nights, and we did this stretch. So I'll go with you. Same thing, B plus.
Do you feel like, before we close this, I wanted to ask you one more Ayton-related question. And just the next few months of the season, we have about 10 weeks left in the regular season here, not factoring the All-Star break, so really 9 weeks of the regular season. How big are these next 2-plus months for a guy like DeAndre? Because I feel like him showing more progress and him showing more dominance is really key to this Suns team moving forward.
I think it's big for everybody, to be honest. You can't play this badly and not kind of prove it when you have the chance. I mean, everybody going into that 3-game road trip, Denver, Lakers, San Antonio, I mean, the past 5 or 6 games here have been just really, really, really bad. So everybody needs to answer for that. The last game Ayton played before he went out was that Charlotte game, which was, to me, one of his absolute worst games of the year, minus 27. He was just completely lost on defense in that game. So I think for everybody it's important, but I definitely hear what you're saying. He needs to kind of get back into that mid-December gear. Hopefully the extra rest of recovering from this injury helps and the All-Star break helps, and we can see them start to tinker with some things, put the ball in his hands a little more when the games are really kind of meaningless here down the stretch, because I think he's really capable of even bigger than he had in that December stretch. I think we could see 40 points. We could see 20 rebounds. So I'm excited, but he obviously has a long way to go.
Yeah, I'm right there with you as well, Brendan. That'll do for today's podcast, guys. Appreciate you all listening. And as always, lots of Lonzo Ball news to go through. And we'll see if that trade actually comes through to fruition before the deadline. We'll keep you updated here as we always do. But thanks again for tuning in for the trimester report cards, too. We finished it up today with DeAndre and Mikal Bridges. So we'll be back with you guys for your Twitter-related mailbag questions tomorrow. If you haven't already submitted a question and you're listening in, type in at LockedOnNBAnet and also at Bright Side of the Sun. You can also find us at Eastsidery, at BrendanClean14, and LockedOnPHXSun. So if you want to get in a mailbag question, we have a lot of different Twitter accounts and options that you can hit up.